Welcome back to Slay Away, the podcast where we discuss the inspiration behind your favorite horror films, lore, gore, and every kill in between. I'm your host, E.L. King. On this episode, I'm gathered round for a campfire chat of horrors with Sir Caitlin. Sir, I'm so excited to have you here. Are you ready to chat about all things horror with me?
Oh my goodness, I'm so ready to chat.
I'm so excited. So I want to kick it off by just asking you about your experiences with horror and finding out if there's a particular experience that really shaped your love of horror.
So mainly, I actually was not a huge fan of horror as a kid. I was really scared by it. What got me back into wanting to watch more of it was like the whole streaming thing. It brought back my love of being scared because it's an emotion that like you don't really get to feel with a whole lot of horror movies. You have to navigate yourself through them. So it brought a lot of that stuff back. And then from there, I started watching more horror movies. But like, if you want to know my first experience with a horror movie.
Yeah, I do. And I want to hear about that adrenaline rush because it sounds like that's what the horror junkie in all of us is calling out for.
So my first experience with a horror movie that I can recall was I was super young. I must have been under 7 years old or whatever, and I couldn't sleep. So I went to my parents' room and they had the TV running because my mom, you know, sleeps with the TV on. And of course, playing on the TV was It. It was the old It movie with Tim Curry.
Ooh, the miniseries. Yeah, that terrified me as a kid as well. And Tim Curry, he's just such a fantastic character actor, and anything that he does,
is perfect.
So amazing. And yeah, he was terrifying as It. So yes, please tell me all about your experience with watching that miniseries because it scarred me as a child. Yes. I was also really afraid of spiders. So
yes.
The spider in the original just terrified me.
Beep, beep, Richie. I'll show you how to slow down. They all slow down here.
For me, it was the idea that like, you know, the drain, the thing, and like all of it scared me because I didn't know what was possible and what wasn't possible. I was still a little kid. So the fact that I couldn't sleep, went to my parents' room to try and sleep and then also couldn't sleep was just awful. That was my first experience with a horror movie, and I got scared from then on out. Like it was so jarring for me. I convinced myself for a very long time that I didn't like scary stuff.
Yeah, so it was unsettling, and then like you just experienced having no safe space, no safe haven, because you went to your parents' room and it was on the television. Wow. Okay. Well, so tell everybody a little bit more about you and, you know, who you are and what you do.
So I primarily stream horror games. I do them of almost every single kind. I stay away from the really old ones because I get frustrated on stream when I play them. But I love first person horror games. I love horror games that make you think a little bit. I love horror games that shape your experiences as you move through them. I love horror games that just creep you out a little bit. I don't really need jump scares. Those are cool. But I like the idea that I don't know what's going to happen and it leaves me questioning what's around me. I love that. And I think hearkening back to the, I didn't know what was going on with horror when I was younger. I didn't realize that I liked that feeling until I got way older, because like I said, horror just makes me feel something that other things can't. I just feel things and I love it. So that's primarily what I do. So it's kind of a hybrid experience from, you know, the gaming world of it, from the movie world of it, and then also with like TV shows as well. So, I mean, I have a little bit of a horror palette, I guess. Oh, and true crime is heavily an inspiration for me, too.
Fantastic, because we love true crime here.
Oh, I love true crime.
Absolutely love true crime. And I think that that's one of the things for me with horror is that, like true crime, and I kind of consider true crime to really be a subgenre of horror overall. And true crime, especially most true crimes, are often the source material for many horror films that we know today, and horror film characters. So
I find horror in and of itself and those experiences you were talking about in games and that sort of, what do I want to say, inquisitive, investigative type of atmosphere to be something that really draws me in and piques my interest. So I wonder if that's sort of some of the feeling you were describing and what is interesting for you as well.
100%. I think that that's a very good way of describing it too. It's the fact that it just makes me want, I want to know more. I want to know why. I want to know how someone does something to someone else so horrific. And I mean, murder has always fascinated me. True crime has always fascinated me. It's just always been something that's been around my life. And I just, it's so fascinating to understand that like people, this is like a biological thing that's that is ingrained into people's brains. And I freaking love it. Just the knowledge of wanting to know more.
Is there a particular true crime case that you found yourself especially fascinated by?
I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot that just stick out to me. There's the obvious ones of like Eileen Wuornos, you know?
Yeah, when we think about serial killers, we can go down that route, of course.
But then there's also like Ed Kemper. Those are a couple of them. There's so many that I love. There's something about, for me, when I hear or read stories being told, I love the ones that for some reason, this might just be me, when they're in like the 80s or 90s or early 2000s, and then something happens because there's all that miscommunication that happens with the lack of technology that we have today. So it's like, well, if cell phones were invented, well, if GPS was like a thing, you know, could this have been solved at that point, or would it have still fallen by the wayside?
Yeah.
There's like, something about that whole.
Back when all we had were landlines, things were so different.
Right.
And even when you think about crime and even crime in the media, things were so different in terms of our awareness of crime because when a lot of these cases started to become more widely publicized, it was because media started becoming more readily available, not just to people who could afford a television or a radio, but everyone or someone who could like pick up a newspaper, right? Or pay for a paper. So as the internet has happened, like we know about things, you know, minutes after they happen. So it's very different. And those things are in our hands right away. So I assume you probably liked or have watched Mindhunter on Netflix.
I love
of your
Mindhunter.
Interest in Ed Kemper.
Partially, like I mean, I was into Ed Kemper before that show for sure, and then that show came out, and I was like, holy shit, this just makes me so much more interested in him because Cameron Britton did him so well.
So fantastic. Absolutely phenomenal performance. That actor is just incredible in that role.
But also, fun fact, I actually live 2 minutes away from CMF prison. Which is where Ed Kemper is held. It references a lot in the
just
show.
Just one of those things where she's like, I live real close by.
It's exciting for me. It's just because there's so many murders in Northern California. And for some reason, I take a weird pride in that. Not like because of the murders, but like there's just so much to learn about and so much to.
There's a lot of history.
There's so much history and the fact
and,
that.
And
like,
there's a lot of notorious and even unsolved serial killings in
so many
California.
Yes.
There's a lot that I've been researching recently, and I had just watched I'll Be Gone in the Dark, the HBO
miniseries,
and then the book. And I haven't read the book yet, but about the Golden State Killer. And
I have read the book, and
I heard that it's phenomenal.
So
and
phenomenal.
I can't wait to read it. Obviously, the story on both ends is really tragic. But
I'd say if you have any kind of anxiety after reading stuff, you need to just be careful about how much you consume in a time, because she's so fantastic with her words that it caused me to kind of like check around me a little bit. I had to make sure that I wasn't being watched.
Right. And if anyone, if you're curious about what we're referring to, so All Be Gone in the Dark is a, I want to say, sort of part it's... autobiography, part true crime telling about the,
right.
the case of the Golden State Killer by Michelle McNamara, who tragically, she passed away in 2016 while working on the case.
Yeah.
And it was recently adapted into a six episode miniseries for HBO. So I do recommend that you read the book and watch the miniseries. I have not read the book yet. I've watched the miniseries. So, like, I know, talk to yourself, Enola. Yes. But yeah, it's one of those things where I try to consume as much as I can. And sometimes I only have time for media that's been put together on, like, in YouTube video form. Well, at this well, point sure. in my life.
I'm the exact same way. And I always get the people.
Audiobooks. Right. So that's something that I find a little bit easier to, like, if I'm working, then audiobooks are a little bit easier. But I guess that kind of brings me back to a question for you, and maybe we could flip this. So normally I would ask, you know, what's your favorite movie monster or killer, and you can answer that question, but aside from Ed Kemper and Eileen Wuornos, is there any true crime or, like, serial killer that is just one that you're particularly fascinated by?
Aside from Ed Kemper, I'd have to kind of like sit on that for a hot minute, because if we're talking about real life ones, we could go with someone like the Golden State Killer. We could go with oh my goodness. We could go with the vampire of Sacramento.
Right.
being in a Northern California place. I mean, we could go with the Zodiac, again, Northern California. And actually, that's again, super close by to me. He killed people.
A lot happening in the San Francisco area.
Yes, he killed people
especially during the 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. And I guess, so... for you, you're really drawn to true crime. Is there anything you're digging your heels into right now? Anything new?
I just finished the HBO series Murder on Middle Beach with the kid who's making a documentary about his mother who got murdered. And it's a cold case. And, you know, there's a lot of things out there that could point to somebody. But it's a cold case. It's very good. I cried. I always felt like I was super weird for being in a murder when I was in high school.
The thing is, like, I think that we get a interesting rap when people who are super into true crime, there's the question of, like, well, are you, it's like the question at the end of Don't Fuck with Cats.
Oh my god, I love that show.
Like, are you part of the problem?
Oh my god.
Like, the team of, like, super internet sleuths, right?
That show messed me up in different ways.
So it's interesting, because I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm part of the problem. I'm fascinated by it, but I'm just as fascinated by the people who commit the crimes as I am by the victims and their families and the overall impact. But I do agree that what doesn't get talked about much is the families and the impact. And most of the time what happens is those people want to be left alone and just move on. But because these things become sensationalized, they never get to move on. And that's where maybe we become part of the problem.
I think that kind of ties into the whole media thing, is that we're on a constant cycle of, you know, Twitter feeds and news feeds and stuff. And I think that's where the problem sets in, is that you are replaying this trauma for a family, and you're not even thinking about the fact that a family is watching this, their loved one's face being plastered everywhere or whatever. And you're taking the sensitivity out of it, especially when it comes to minorities, especially when it comes to sex workers, especially when it comes to queer folks. You know, like, they don't get enough, like, actual human representation as the victims of this terrible crime because of whatever other factors might influence that. And it's terrible.
And there was a great example of this, and I recently watched a four-part docuseries. It's called Cold Blooded. It's about the Clutter family murders that Truman Capote based In Cold Blood on. And so his, like, true crime novel, and then they did the movie, of course. So I would absolutely love to actually do an episode on In Cold Blood at some point and talk about that and go in deeper into that. But also with respect to the family, because they just want to be left alone and move on.
Right. Of course.
Because the entire docuseries is from their perspective and interviews with family members that were willing to speak and other members of the community in that community that were close to the family and willing to say something about it. Because it became this huge snowball effect. And then, you know, there's people that come to the town and go to the house because the house is still there. And
sure.
They actually went and they actually shot the film in the actual house.
Oh my goodness. Talk about like,
also,
talk about and, like using the proper references and stuff, you know?
And when Truman Capote first visited the town, he actually went to the house, like, I don't know, a month maybe after the crimes were committed and took a bunch of promotional pictures of himself. I highly encourage you to watch it. I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay, cool. I just wrote it down as you said it.
Yeah, it's like, called Cold-Blooded.
I'm always looking for something to watch, especially like, you know, on like the treadmill or while I'm doing other stuff. I like having something on in the background that I can hear and listen to and really just kind of zone out to. Typically it's true crime podcast, typically it's music or whatever, but 100% like I need something else to watch.
Well, I will tell you what, I just subscribed to Discovery Plus because of the ID channel, and it's all true crime all the time. Listen. And also the haunting and supernatural shows.
Listen.
So it's the best $6.99 I ever spent.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been saying this for like a week. I was just talking about it yesterday at work.
They went hard on promotion for a while, and I was like, yes, this is like, excellent, and I share it with my brother because, you know, like, we're both really into that.
So. It's like 15 channels, and they're all the stuff that we love to binge watch.
And there's, like, 9 seasons of A Haunting, and it's, like, the third episode of A Haunting is an actual haunting case that Ed and Lorraine Warren worked on, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing.
I love that.
An episode we have coming up is actually on Ed and Lorraine Warren. So
I love that.
I'm super excited for that because I love talking about things that have a correlation in reality or some.
Well,
they have something grounded in reality that then, like, you know, spawned the story or the film or whatever. So
I think that that's what really makes it scary to us, though, right? Is like
exactly.
is like the fact that it's real. Like this could really happen to somebody.
Well, back to horror movie monsters or killers. Like, do you have a favorite horror movie monster or killer?
I mean, as far as monsters go, I don't know if you've seen my tattoo, but I have not. I am a huge Xenomorph fan. I love Alien.
Love Alien. Perfect.
I think as far as monsters go, it kind of encapsulates a lot of what I like about different movies. It's the idea that this scary monster can track you and not see, but she can hear you, and she's menacing and she's fearsome, and oh my god, I love it. I love everything about that monster. She just has a place in my heart because of how fucking scary she is. Fun fact, I actually hadn't watched the Alien movies until I played the Alien game. I did not watch them until I played it. And the game made me love the movies even more and vice versa. And so now I have this terribly close affinity for the Xenomorph. But as far as like movie killers, I have so many. Like there's John Doe from Seven, and there's Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. I love both of them.
I love you went in that direction, more of the crime drama direction, because most people refer to the 80s slashers.
So I'm gonna expose myself here. I haven't really seen almost any of those.
Oh, okay. Like, John Doe from Seven is fantastic. And like, it's very, it's hard to pin that character down, and the end of the film is so incredible. Like, but I want to tag back and ask you, like, what was your experience playing Alien Isolation like? Because I didn't get through the whole game.
At first, okay, so the first time I played it, I had never seen it be played. I just knew what it was about, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna give it a try. It was maybe 4 months into streaming, and so I was terrified. It nails the atmosphere so well. The alien has what the development team calls a menace gauge, and it has two working AIs to try and track you. So it's very calculated, and it knows where you are at all times. And then it looks for you. And then if you stay in one place too long, it'll just find you. But she never runs on the same track. She moves back and forth at different paces and different ways, depending on the proximity to you. I thought that was super fascinating. And then the fact that like they told a good story about Amanda Ripley, and it all made sense in the end. And then I loved it. It's a terrifying, stressful game. I always tell people, if you play it, please don't try and have like, you know, Will of Steel and play it on hardcore mode, because it's really awful the first time you play it on the worst difficulty.
I always play things on easy the first time, because I'm like, same. I'm probably gonna get scared and like have to pee a lot. So
same.
People
seem to think that because I play a lot of horror games that I'm not scared of them, and I'm 100% scared of them. Like, but that's why I like playing them, because it's always something fresh and new to me. But I have played Alien on the hardest difficulty, and I've beaten it on the hardest difficulty. But I didn't know going into that playthrough that you don't have a map. And you don't have the little tracker scanner thing.
Oh my gosh.
So I had to figure out where the hell I was at each step of the way and try and navigate it myself. And it was daunting, and it was horrendous. And unless you really like pain, I don't recommend that you do it.
Well, that's what hard modes are all about, right? Like, it's about the challenge and the pain, I guess, that's a little bit.
Exactly right. And that's actually why I did it.
It's like, yeah, you're just doing it for the challenge and the fun of it, and to push yourself. Well, speaking of horror games, just going back to you playing things on like the hardest difficulty and all that good stuff. I know, and in particular, I popped into your stream at one point in time when you were speed running Outlast and you were trying to get under your lowest time, somewhere under like 54 minutes or something like that. It was really funny because I think you also had consumed quite a bit of beer at the time.
Yes, that's typically how my runs go.
So tell me more about speed running Outlast.
So I first played Outlast. Again, when I first started streaming, you always have to challenge yourself and do all the games on stream and stuff. And I'd pretty much clearly established that I was very into horror games. And so I played that. And my first playthrough, I think I spent like 20 hours playing that game the first time. I just hid so much. It took me like 3 weeks of streams, and it was like at least.
Oh, when you did it on easy or the
on
first
easy.
Time that you played?
Yeah,
oh, this, okay.
No.
Yeah, that was the first game that I ever streamed.
That was my very first stream ever. And people's first games.
Really? Yeah. I played it in 7 hours.
Yes.
I guess I was, but I'm also like,
you're a pro.
I like to call myself like I've got nerves of steel. No.
Oh, okay. No, they I was really scared and I didn't know where to go. And that's my thing with games, is that if I don't know where to go, I try and figure it out. And so I'll stop and I'll wait there and just try and theorize a path of which I should go.
You're an investigator.
I am an investigator. I have to know where it comes from, where it goes, Cotton Eye Joe, whatever, you know, I don't know. But it just the game, I love it and I hate it, because you're running away from things in an asylum that are coming after you, and the only thing that you have is a video camera for some reason, even though this is 2013 that this game was made. Like, you only have a video camera with batteries, and which, sure, let's just go with that. But the fact that you're being chased is one of those things that it's one of my fears. I hate being chased. It freaks me out. Especially in the dark, especially when I don't know where I'm going, and especially when I only have one light to guide me. So the whole game premise was right up my alley as far as what it's gonna hit me. And then as far as speedrunning it, there was this one day I was bored and I was in my Discord and I was like, I'm just going to try and go as fast as I can on this. And so my first quote speed run of it was like 2 hours and 45 minutes. And then I just kept streaming it. I streamed it on Twitch and I was like, how much faster can I be? How much faster can I be? And that was always the thing. So as I played it more and more, I identified places that I could jump around enemies, jump across, duck down, run through, or hop over to make myself go a little bit faster. And I just kept going each and every week. I got a little bit better at it. And my current personal best is 56 minutes and 36 seconds. I have not been able to beat it. I set that on my birthday last year, which is Halloween, by the way. And I have not been able to beat that personal best. And it just, the game is one that I love. I know it almost by heart. And it just, it's one of my favorite games. It's just so, it still is so scary and it still is so good.
It terrifies me. It's hard for me to play it a second time. I distinctly remember two specific moments in the game. The first part where you're in sort of the prison cells where you come upon the two naked men.
Oh, yeah. Dong bros.
And you very much see penis.
You see all the penis.
There's a lot of penis. And they're like talking about how the things they're going to do to you. And I'm just like, okay. And you have to, at that point, you know that you have no way to fight back. And that's where you discover that you just have to run.
You have to figure out
how to run and find the path. And then more towards the very end of the game, before you get past, I think the preacher.
Okay.
There is the, I refer to him more as the Goliath.
Chris.
Yes. And so the guy with the chains like dangling from his body and stuff. And it's the part where you're trying to figure out how to get past him. And you end up going into the room that has the air duct. And it took me, I died about 15 times before I could figure out where to go in that part of the game the first time I played it. And oh my gosh, it was extremely frustrating. But once I finally did find the way, I was like, oh my God, thank God. Because he was so scary to me.
So scary. It just, and those same elements are some that I struggle with too. My very first time playing it, it was the same thing. Chris always stuck out to me. Whenever you hear his chains rattling, you're like, oh my God, I have to hide. I have to go.
Please God, no.
Please.
Not Chris.
but my favorite character, even before I started streaming it, was Dr. Trigger, and he still is now. He is the doctor in that room, and he wheels you in on a chair. He puts you, and then he cuts off your fingers. And it just, there's something about that scene that is just so horrifying in every way, shape, and form. And it's offset by Dr. Traeger's like witty commentary. And it's so unsettling. And we in my channel, we love Dr. Traeger. We talk about his booty because his booty shows. We talk about the fact that he's not wearing a mask properly.
He does have his butt out.
His butt's just exposed, you know.
You know, I love the mountain air up here at night. You want to head out and take a stroll? Go ahead, I'll wait here. Go on, run free. I'm in no hurry. No? All right. Nose to the grindstone, I like that. Okay then, right this way. Anyway, truth be told, I was just tired of looking at my own stance. Here we are then. Thanks so much for coming by. We'll begin your consultation in a moment. just need a second to wash up and, film movies. And it'll give us a chance to talk. You know, I'm a bit worried how much time you've been spending with Father Martin. I hope you haven't been letting him confuse you with all this holier-than-thou Bible-thumping. No offense to the man, but I sometimes worry he might just be a little bit crazy. It's understandable when people get scared. There's like to turn to God as anything else. I mean, God died with the gold standard. We're on to a more concrete faith now. You have to rob Paul to pay Peter. There's no other way. Murder in it is the simplest form, but what happens when all money's gone? All money becomes a matter of faith. And that's what I'm here for. To make you believe. You paying attention? Don't pass out on me. There's a lot for you to absorb. Better, right? Here's an old cheat sheet. We made a consumer to the means of production. This thing is gonna sell itself.
Yeah, I love Outlast. It's the same parts as you. The part where you drop down and you're running from Chris in the dark through the courtyard and you just hear him. You can't see him. You just hear him. That terrifies me. I don't know where the hell he is. And I'm like, I'm just running, I guess.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. It's still a really terrifying game. And then Outlast 2 took it to a different
it was different
level. I was like, okay, cool. So because I already feel that any horror film set in a backwater swamp is the worst kind of horror film that ever existed. But it, you know, it's interesting. But there was a part of the game where I got stuck and I couldn't figure out where to go.
Yeah, that happens. With Outlast 2, it scares me in a different way. And I don't play it very often. I don't like the game that much, but not for the story. The story is okay once you really pay attention. But because it's kind of a long game and it's a little bit tedious, and there are parts that I simply just don't like. They're just kind of uncomfortable for me.
I agree. Even at the beginning, I felt that there was a little...
Don't it was play odd it very the often. Way,
essentially, there is a trans character at the very beginning of the game.
Yeah.
And I felt very uncomfortable about how that character was positioned as being bad. And it almost felt like they were bad based on the fact that they were a transsexual character. And that, to me, immediately made me uncomfortable as a queer person.
Interesting.
You're
making me see that in like a whole different light now. I'm like, yeah, I didn't even see that. Like,
well, why is that? You know, they kind of made it like that's something that is something to be feared in that sequence. So that's how I felt about it with it. And that's the main thing that I remember about it from the first time I played it. That's the only thing that stands out to me.
And they intentionally left that character very ambiguous. They don't ever say Val's gender or if he or she has a gender.
But yeah, so that's kind of like how I felt about it. I was like, this is so strange to me because why would they present this character this way right. and make it something that seems bad. But
that's an interesting take on it. And now I'm like seeing it in a different way. I don't know why I didn't even pick up on that before. The only person who could be in like the queer spectrum is demonized. I get that. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt about it. But you know, kind of flip-flopping, I keep saying flip-flopping, but jumping to another question. So we talked a little bit about, you know, movie monsters and killers, but is there a particular horror movie monster or villain that scares you the most, and why would you never want to encounter them in real life?
I think I'm gonna kind of double up on the xenomorph thing with this one. I know that.
I mean, you don't want that acid breath in your face for sure.
But also, I was gonna pair that with another monster that has similar qualities. If you want to hear about that.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me more about Xenomorph and why that is a creature you'd never want to encounter in real life.
Well, because like the freaking they know everything. Like they can hear you all the time. They can navigate with just listening. It's creepy. But the other monster that I was going to relate it to was like the creatures from The Descent. Did you see that movie?
The Descent is one of my all-time favorite films.
It's such a good movie.
I feel because it has a really kick-ass strong yes. cast of six amazing female characters. Yes. It's even like, though there's that one female character that annoys the shit out of me, and I'm kind of glad that she does. I think you know which one I'm talking about.
But
those freaking, like, I'm glad you broke your leg. Shut up.
Nice job.
So they don't have
a name, right?
A specific name. It's a creature. Exactly. But let me see, actually, because I think they did.
It's like a cave crawler or something like that. Name.
Yeah, they're crawlers. That's crawlers. What they
got it. The movie terrified me. It's everything that I'm really scared of. But it's all coupled into a creature that knows its way around a cave and you don't. It's the whole idea, excuse me, that you don't know where the hell you are. And this creature knows everything that you're going to do, and it can hear everything that you're doing. It just, it terrifies me. I think
anything that hunts by sound is way more terrifying than yes. things that can see you.
Yes.
Because not making sound is a lot harder than hiding yourself.
Yeah.
Hiding yourself by sound is almost impossible, it feels like. And it's yeah, those are absolutely terrifying creatures. And let's dig into The Descent for a minute, because this is a film that is just absolutely fantastic. I just watched it like twice in a month. And I assume that you've only seen the US version, but don't let me.
I've only seen the US. Wait, is there? Because like I thought they were all British in that one.
So they are, but the US version of the film is the only really accessible version on streaming services in the US. And it has a different ending than the original British release. So there is a different ending to the film, and you can actually find it on YouTube. I highly recommend that you watch it.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it for you, but it provides a much deeper, ominous ending to the film.
No, that's cool.
That I think would not necessarily allow for a sequel. I don't know. But yeah, they're both good endings, I think. But the reason that they changed the ending for US audiences was because it wasn't hopeful enough.
So what?
I was like, okay, Americans are a bunch of fucking pussies.
Right. So, but also, please, let's not act like the US is a very hopeful country. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, I was like, in 2005, maybe. I don't know.
Possibly. Pre-recession, but, you know.
So, yeah, the creatures, they stalk the spelunkers, and they're like, they're not supernatural. They're not extraterrestrial. No. They're literally just
people.
People that have evolved differently because they've evolved underground. Mm-hmm. Which is super interesting when you think about evolution. And essentially, this is just the food chain, baby. It's not, You know, you're just not at the fucking top of it.
Yeah, they're not looking to kill you for any reason other than survival. Like they're
exactly.
They're, and I think that when you that what you said about
you
the
really
evolution
can't
thing,
even demonize them. You walked into their house,
right? Like you went in there. It's the same thing that I say about sharks, because people hate sharks and I love them, but I'm like, listen, when you go into an ocean, you are in shark territory. Like that is their home. And if they think that you're food, then that's fair game. You cannot demonize the animals for doing what they do. Like that is 100% in their nature. You can't control that.
Yeah.
I was going to go back to what you said about the evolution thing, because that's something that I had thought about, like when I first watched the movie as like a young teenager. And I was like, oh, well, if you believe in evolution, you believe that this could be true. And then there could be people underneath the ground that we've never even.
Oh, 100%, especially in the Appalachian Mountains. Please.
Oh, my God. Yes.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the Fallout series. So even though Fallout 76 was a total flop when it came out, but, I still played it a lot and loved it.
But there's so much cool lore in that game.
Oh, totally.
And I love that stuff.
I'm a huge Mothman fan.
I'm a huge, oh my God, why am I blanking on it? Wendigo. Wendigo's
creepy.
Yeah, I
love
out.
Wendigos.
Oh, love it.
One of my favorite creatures.
Yeah, they're fucking terrifying. So I mean, the Fallout series did a lot of good for that piece of it. I think that it does lore very well. And I fell in love with Fallout 4. Like there's so much coolness to that game, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I have not touched it in a couple of years because I'm just too busy.
I replay it way too often and then I get super sucked in. So is there any horror film in particular you might want to see reimagined and released today? I have my own particular feelings about remakes, but, you know, there could always be one that you want to see redone.
I hate remakes in every way, shape, and form.
Okay, well, there you go. We're kind of on the same page. Although I will say that the Evil Dead remake I thought was good. I'll tell you that the two remakes I think that you're okay for are Evil Dead and Dawn of the Dead.
Okay. I don't like remakes in any way, shape, or form. I feel like it really is a cheap way of getting cash. And I would rather see people use their imagination and come up with new horror stories that really make people like us want to watch them over and over. So the one that sticks out to me in that regard is Get Out, because it was so different and it touched on a lot of themes in society and about injustices and stuff. And it was beautifully done.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film. Absolutely fantastic. And honestly, I would have loved to see it take home more Oscars than 100%. It did. It did take home Best Original Screenplay, but it was a fantastic film. Although that was a big win for horror, because we don't normally get any.
No, because so. Horror... Well, let's just be honest. Like, typically, horror movies are not that great. Like, this was different because it was so story driven, and it was so
extremely thought provoking.
It's very thought provoking and a little and really uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but in a very eerie way, the way that we as horror fans like to be uncomfortable.
Right. If you're not left questioning and uncomfortable at the end of the film, I think when you are, then you know you've just watched something really, really good. And that's why I think when people watch something like Midsommar, for example, and they're like, what the fuck?
I have not seen that.
You got to watch it and come to a conclusion for yourself of like, what did I just watch? And then go watch some of the analyses on the film.
And that's,
for example, Ari Aster, I like Midsommar a lot and I don't like Hereditary.
See, okay.
And people fucking love Hereditary.
So I have to watch Hereditary too. You know what? Maybe I'll just do that tonight. I'm like, maybe I'll just sit back and watch a scary movie tonight for myself. But like, I haven't watched it because for the longest time I was waiting for my ex and me and my ex broke up last year after like 6 years. And I was like, oh, I don't have to wait for anybody anymore. I can watch whatever I want, whenever I want. And there's no reason not to. So I just have to do it. It's just, you know, couples things where you're like, got to wait for the other person to come home and we can watch it. Or whenever they're off, we can watch it kind of thing. No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on a roll lately. I watched like 3 horror films yesterday. I watch like 1 a day, but that's just, you know, this is my new thing now. I'm really leaning into it. So
I love it.
I'm curious, do you have a horror film that you're aware of that was inspired by a true crime that you really, really like?
I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, but The Conjuring.
Yeah, The Conjuring. And I don't know if that's necessarily a true crime so much as it is an actual real supernatural event. Case or event that did occur. And all of the cases that have been transitioned to film in the Conjuring universe are from actual cases that Ed and Lorraine Warren had worked on.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons that they're so fascinating to me. And when I watched the original Annabelle, I really thought that I wasn't going to like it. Once I got into it, it was really, really good. And if you actually watch that one, very much there is like a very satanic panic era true crime.
Oh, that's great.
In that film.
Oh, man.
So watch Annabelle Creation for sure.
Got it. But yeah, I remember watching the Conjuring for the first time and not thinking that I'd be super into it because it gave me Insidious vibes. And I liked Insidious up until the last little bit. Mm-hmm. And then it got really stupid. And so The Conjuring, I was like, okay, this is going to be great. And then it's going to be stupid at the end because for some reason people can't end horror movies. just freaking end them, man.
I love The Conjuring. It's one of my favorite films.
It's so good. And the dynamic between a husband and a wife who are interested in the same paranormal shit is so cool to me because it's like, okay, well, if they found each other, I can find someone, right?
I know, right? I always am kind of like, okay, well, you know, if you're into my, you know, if your weird matches my weird, maybe we can weird together.
I'm like, hey, do you like roller coasters and true crime and paranormal stuff and scary games and you're okay with me having a stream schedule? Then I'm the girl for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, if you're cool with me not spending every waking minute worrying about what fuck you're doing, then I think we're gonna be good because I got my own interests.
Can you give me my space, please? Goodbye. Hello, yeah. Goodbye.
Well, cool. Do you happen to remember what the like most recent horror film you watched was?
Oh my god, I was trying to think of it earlier. It was around the same time as this. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head was A Quiet Place.
Right. Yeah.
But I think there was another one around that time that I watched as well, but I cannot for the life of me think about it.
I watched A Quiet Place when it was streaming, so probably like a year ago.
God.
And then the new ones, they moved it out and then they moved it back up to May.
The Quiet Place was really good. I was kind
extremely
of
extremely well done.
I was fantastic
directorial, I think, debut from John Krasinski.
Yes. He did everything. He was like the Tommy Wiseau of that movie. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so impressed.
And John Krasinski with a beard.
Hot.
Chip it.
Hello.
But yeah, no, absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. And I love Emily Blunt as well. And really great performances from the young actors in the film as well.
Oh my God, so good.
It starts with a horrible tragedy and it's scary. It's the same thing. It's creatures that hum by sound. And that's what we're into today.
But I mean, it's the thing, it's the creatures that hunt by sound, but also I'm petrified of the dark. And so that there's like that whole element of if you can't see or if it's really dark and something's hunting you, but you can't see it. It's like that scene in The Silence of the Lambs with the night vision camera. Mm-hmm. Where he can see her, but she cannot see him, and it just it terrifies. It gives me chills whenever. And I'm sure that you've had this. I think everyone in their life has had this at some point. When you feel like someone's watching you, but you can't quite figure it out. It just it's it's so unsettling to me. And that's what I feel like whenever I watch these kind of movies, that something's stalking you. It's terrifying to me.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the elements of a lot of even like just true crime stories or films that are so scary is there's usually an element of stalking involved that.
Right.
It evokes a very primal fear.
Right.
About someone tracking your activities and kind of knowing your routines and
hate it.
And then you not knowing how you should be changing your routines. It's just, because it's as old as time. It's as old as serial killers. Like, that's how they hunt, right? Like, they track your routines.
They're predators. Yeah.
It's very difficult. That's the hardest thing for people to change.
So, I mean, I don't know why I thought out of this just for a minute. I don't know how you feel about these movies, but a movie that stuck out to me just in general in my past was the first Paranormal Activity. And I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, I think it's really good. And I feel like it doesn't get a whole lot of praise because of the not so great sequels that came up after it.
I think it does overall by the horror community. It's not one of my particular favorites, but
I love sound footage. I think that's because
for me, there's better paranormal films out there. But also because I came from the era of things like The Blair Witch Project.
Sure.
I'm just old.
Sure. I mean,
I feel like I'm kind of like, Paranormal Activity didn't quite do it for me. And I kind of hate night vision.
I also hate night vision, but also it's weird. I appreciate the film for what it was because they did it on such a small budget and it managed to severely creep me out. Like the whole footprints thing, they use very, very cheap scares to allude to the fact that something was there when it really wasn't. So it's the whole idea, like the scene where I think Mia's watching him when he's sleeping for like hours and then just goes back to bed. If that part freaks me out, like, because someone's watching me while I sleep. And I think about that a lot because I sleep on a ground floor. I'm like, someone could easily be just like in my backyard watching me sleep.
There's some interesting stuff with just the activity of like sleepwalking sleep activities as well. So I'm a sleep activity, sleep talker.
Oh,
I will get up sometimes. I don't necessarily walk, but I will get up. And I do talk in my sleep sometimes.
Interesting.
I'll have long conversations. The biggest thing I did was apparently one time I fell asleep with my friend's Twitch chat open and I had a full on Twitch chat conversation while I was asleep. I was typing in my, like, I was asleep. And it was not fully intelligible, apparently.
Oh, man.
I was just like, man, that's embarrassing. but like, yeah, man, some of that stuff. There's a very interesting true crime case about
a man who
apparently murdered his wife while he was supposedly sleepwalking.
But didn't they let him off because of...
Like, they did not, actually. He's still in prison.
Really? I thought there was one where they let him off.
No. Mm-mm. He's in... there's one where they, I think... He was exonerated, but there's another man from, I think he lived in Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah, where he was not.
Right.
But I don't know if you asked me and my dad, because we both were watching it on Dateline, we think he was asleep.
Ooh, Dateline. I love Dateline.
And so a lot of stuff has been done in horror, but is there anything that you feel like you'd like to see next in the horror community at large, whether it be in games or film?
Less remakes. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And then I personally would like to see more diversity in films. And that goes not only with people who act in them, but also people who direct in them, write the people who I want to see more diverse creators at the top. And see more of the different influences that they could bring to the table versus just the, hey, let's do a remake of Halloween. Let's do a remake of this. It's boring to me. Like I said earlier, I want to see something new and I want to see new ideas. And I'll reference it again, but Jordan Peele and Get Out, like, it was so different for the horror genre.
Well, and I think on top of that, we need to be celebrating different voices in horror. And when, because there are several films being made by diverse voices, and they're not being talked about, you know, aside from exploitation films of like the 70s and other stuff like that. But like, there's, I mean, I think Peele's in his own way paving the way for that to start happening. We have Xavier Bergen, who directed Horror Noir, A History of Black Horror, the documentary that was on Netflix. And so he's actually directed quite a few different things. And I don't know how much he's done in the horror space, but like finding these voices and then paying attention to them and what they're doing.
And really spotlighting them too.
Space is important, I think.
And, and putting them on that same level as the stupid remakes that we're so tired of seeing, but none of us will admit that we're tired of seeing. It's... I'm like, how did so many remakes get made? I don't understand.
And I think the reason that Dawn of the Dead and the reason that Evil Dead, the remakes are fantastic, is because the original filmmakers are involved. They actually like did the screenplay and did the reimagining. George A. Romero was involved in the new Dawn of the Dead, and Sam Raimi was involved, and even Bruce Campbell in the new Evil Dead. So that's why they're so good, in my opinion.
It's because
their vision is still there, and it's them reimagining other things they would have done if they could at the time that they made the film originally, right? So yeah, like it's not just someone taking someone else's idea and reproducing it for the, I don't know, 21st century. But yeah, I mean, in addition to your love of horror films, do you, are you like a reader at all? Do you, or like, are you into horror novels?
I was a lot when I was younger. I was super into Stephen King. I think a lot of people that are into true crime and horror are.
Do you have a favorite Stephen King novel?
My favorite overall Stephen King story was a short story that was in a book of short Stephen King stories, and it was called Secret Window, Secret Garden, and it was made into Secret Window. This is the movie with Johnny Depp. And it's creepy and it's eerie, and it's about a writer who is going insane slowly, but he doesn't know that he's going insane slowly. And it's so great. It touches on a couple of different things, and Johnny Depp actually does a very good job. I'm not the hugest Johnny Depp fan, so the fact that I give him praise is a big deal for me. But he does such a good job in that role, and I really appreciate that they brought a very small short story that was probably forgotten by a lot of Stephen King people and put it into a movie. And then as far as a full book, I 100% love the book of Pet Sematary. I love it. It's so very good. It's very scary. The book is unsettling in every single way, but also it was fascinating for me because it dealt with the idea that you could rise from the dead.
Right. The original film adaptation terrified me as
me
a child.
Me too.
The remake is awful. But
looking back on the original movie, it was not that great. Like,
yeah, it's like not, but it's still kind of scary for me.
I agree.
And the film remake I thought was awful. So, the last question for me for you is: have you ever had a paranormal experience?
I've had several. The couple that I had when I was younger were more of like a feeling. I remember having someone breathing down my neck when I was in my grandparents' house in Tombstone, Arizona, which is a terribly haunted town. So I had the feeling of being breathed on in a very cold room. It was hot breath. It was really scary. And then I've also seen things around me in Tombstone. I've felt like I have like that weird gut feeling that activates every now and then. It's the whole thing of you think that someone's watching you, but no one's watching you, or so you don't think. But a lot of people in my community are aware of the fact that I have a ghost in my house. My house is haunted. Like I have these little experiences all the time.
Oh, okay.
It was terrifying when I first moved in, but I've lived here for 5 years. And so I just kind of deal with it. What does my chat call him? He it's like a cat ghost. They call him, they call him Catspur. Because he does zoomies.
That's what Catspur is? I never understood what it was whenever I would come in your chat.
Yeah, they're like, hey, how's Catspur today? I'm like, oh, he's quiet. But a couple of months ago, I posted this video of my hallway and how like the doors were rattling a little bit. And the ghost had been active in the daytime, which is something that he never does. He's always active at night. And he was rattling door handles. He was going through all the hallway and rattling the door handles. And then he would open them and close them a little bit. And then he'd stop for a while and then it would happen again. The first night that I ever lived in this house, we heard him running up and down the hallway, which is fucking terrifying. The first night in a brand new house. And then we've heard scratching on the walls. We've heard things being moved around in the middle of the night when no one else is here. It's only a little bit creepy because we don't even bother. Oh yeah. And then I saw something run past me when I was doing the dishes. I saw it behind me in the window reflection. I have a haunted house. I don't leave lights totally off in this house. I like to have some light in every room. If I ever show my home to anybody, you'll see I have little like tart burners around my house. I have little night lights, I call them, because I have to have lights on so that I know where I'm going and I can see what's happening, so I don't imagine things in the dark. It freaks me out. For the longest time, have you seen any of my pictures on Twitter at all?
I mean, I've seen some of them, but I didn't, probably not in relation to this.
Possibly. Have you seen the Stranger Things letters behind me?
Yes.
So for the longest time, I had the lights on those letters that went down my hallway to light up the hallway for me. Because it scared me too much. I was too scared to go down the dark hallway in the middle of the night.
Yeah. I sleep with the light on a lot. or I sleep with the TV on. My grandmother used to sleep with the television on. And it's not something I ever did. It's something I started doing probably within the last like year or so. I think I started around the time that quarantine started. Well,
That kind of makes sense, honestly.
It's probably an isolation thing. now it's something where I have something on. It's background noise, or it's something that's like more soothing. Like I told you about me turning Lord of the Rings on to go to sleep, and stuff like that. Well, so I'm a light sleeper, so that's part of it. Is that I'm a light sleeper. I have night terrors really frequently and other stuff like that. I'm very like sensitive when it comes to sleeping.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
I think once or twice.
Yeah, I've had it once. It's one of the creepiest experiences that I've ever had. And I don't want to have it again. It was just kind of like something that just kind of came up in my mind. I wanted to ask you.
It's one of those scenes in the
Haunting of Hill House.
Haunting of Hill House that is always so terrifying to me. And when I've rewatched Haunting of Hill House like five
it's
times.
It's so good.
And I can't watch it with the lights off.
Okay, I'm like getting goosebumps right now thinking about that damn show. That show stuck with me so hard.
It's fantastic, and I actually have never read the book by Shirley Jackson, and I think it came out in 1954, I want to say.
And I think that that's so cool is that there's so many old books that we're just now finding, and it's like people have always had these ideas. People have always had these interests in being scared or ghost stories or whatever, and I think that's just so cool.
Well, yeah. And then, I mean, the book was adapted to film twice before we got the series, right?
Right.
And there's the Vincent Price version of the film, which is fantastic. And then there's like the newer, like 2000s version of the film, which is
like
2000.
Sure.
We'll just put it that way.
2008 is like a vibe too.
It's very much a vibe in horror films. It's very much a vibe. I guess I feel like everything in the 2000s feels like Final Destination looks. Like, that's not a knock on Final Destination, because that was like groundbreaking when it sure. came out. Like, you know what it's I mean? Dated. The feel and look of Final Destination. Yeah. I mentioned to someone I have a particular fascination with horror film poster art from the older era. And I just got this great Art of Horror Films book. And so I'm going through that, and it's got all the illustrations of like old horror movies. Posters and things like that. But we get to like the mid-90s to 2000s, and all horror movie posters at that point in time, even other films, like any film poster you look at becomes just like the main characters superimposed in like this kind of like triangle type shape with some ominous thing behind them and the title of the film. And I'm like, it's so boring.
It's so boring.
And it's sad because I miss horror movie poster art.
I think that
just like how creative and beautiful it was.
I think in general, old poster art is so good. Like, they did, it was hard work to make one. And so when, like, if I ever see a good movie poster, I'm like, well, that's good branding and fantastic marketing. So like you gotta kind of acknowledge it whenever you see it. But sadly, we don't really see a whole lot. Plus, I'm almost 100% certain that movie theaters are going to go away. So we won't see them very much.
I mean, if that's the case, I'm sad. Or if movie theaters went away, please bring back drive-in theaters.
Please bring back drive-ins, because that's a whole different feel.
If you do away with movie theaters, please bring back drive-in theaters and double features.
Yes.
Because that would just be fantastic. Because I think if that were the case, like, we would go to drive-in theaters. Like, if we're not streaming, we would go and see good quality movies in our cars.
Because
it's something that is fun and nostalgic, and God, I can't imagine kids these days that have never been to a drive-in.
I actually have never been to one, and I've wanted to go, and I was supposed to go last year, but
yeah, my mom used to work at the drive-in a couple towns away where we used to go while I was growing up.
Yeah,
she used to work there as a teenager. Just a popcorn girl.
Love it. Love
but
it.
I don't know if they've actually officially closed that one down now. But that's the other thing, is there's been people who have been doing these like pop-up drive-in theaters. And the great thing about living in Los Angeles, one of the things that I miss the most back when you could go outside, is that there's lots of, because of the weather being so nice, there's pop-up outdoor theaters all the time. So it's you park and then you walk up with your like camping chairs, your low sitting camping chairs, and or your blankets and stuff, and you watch a movie outside.
Man.
On one of those big blow up screens. And that was the most fun. And I went to those all the time when I lived in Los Angeles.
That's so cool.
So I really miss those as well.
That's so cool.
We're getting nostalgic. Well,
I was just thinking about, like, you know, LA. I don't necessarily want to live in LA, but I've always felt the pull to move down to Southern California. I've lived up here my entire life, but I was born down in a Riverside. I'm just like, man, I don't know. It was just me like kind of thinking about my life and stuff. So definitely not important, but.
Well, you let me know if I'm ever inclined to move back, you know, roommate on the table.
That's exactly right.
Because I you know, since I did live there and I lived in the West LA area, I lived right by Paramount Pictures in Palms. So I was like 5-6 miles from Venice Beach. It was a great bike ride.
It's the whole thing of you're down with everything that you could want to explore, and I'm very happily living.
Well, and you know, the woods are just a drive away.
But the mountains are beautiful. Once I did have a car, even with the smog and everything, the mountains are beautiful. California is a beautiful state. People give it a lot of shit because it's so expensive. But I'm like, hey, I love it.
It was expensive. I moved back to Seattle. Just expensive here. Traffic's just as bad. I really didn't leave expenses behind by any means. I don't think I could move anywhere without a roommate at this point in time.
Right, exactly. And And what I keep telling people that, like, oh, California is so expensive. I'm like, yeah, but it's relative anywhere you go. Like, my expensive here is your expensive there. I promise. Like, it's not going to really change much. It's just I make more per hour than the average person in the Midwest of the country just because of where I live, you know?
Right.
But exactly. It's the same work. It's not going to be any different.
So, sir, thank you so much for joining me on Slay Away and answering all my questions. I hope you had a fun horror discussion with me and that you'll come back sometime and review a horror film.
100%. 100% I will. Perfect. And thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for slaying away with us. Until next time, stay spooky. Did you enjoy that episode? If you like the podcast, we encourage you to head over to Podchaser and leave us a review. The best part is it helps put Slay Away in the hands of more horror fans.